The New York Times bestseller list contains about 200 books a year. That's out of 2 million. So the chance of being a bestseller is around 1 in 10,000 titles.
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of Media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, again to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P here, as always. My guest today is Michael Castleman. Michael, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you are not the harbinger of doom that people may make you out to be?
Well, I am the author of a new book called The Untold Story of Books, A Writer's History of Book Publishing, that discusses the entire history of book publishing from Gutenberg in 1450 to today with Amazon and digital publishing and Kindles and the whole thing. I'm an author, and I've written 18 other books over the last 40 years. And during that time, I struggled a great deal, as most authors do, with how the crazy publishing world works. And you hear things, you hear all kinds of myths, and they don't really seem true, and they don't pan out. Decades ago, I began researching the history of the book publishing industry in the hope that a 500-year perspective might shed some light. If reviewers can be believed, I have done that. The book has a great deal of perspective that most authors just don't know. So it's really a book for authors, both published and aspiring, who want to know about the business they're about to get into. And it's also for book lovers, bibliophiles, who just love books and are curious about publishing and usually have a lot of myths running around in their heads. And so I try to debunk those myths and show people the truth of how publishing actually evolved and what it's really about today.
I'll ask the question because this gets into my esoterica, but how conspiratorial do we get in this book about the publishing industry?
Not conspiratorial at all. The publishing industry has basically been a technological business from day one. It has always been defined by the technology of printing. And as printing has changed, the book business has changed. And today, with digital publishing, you can dispense with printing if you want to, although 85% of books are still read in print. So printing is still very much with us. But there's no conspiracy. There's no, it's the story of publishing is the story of people trying to harness technology, printing technology, to produce books any way they could under very changing circumstances over time. And it's those circumstances that dictated the business rather than a cobble of nasty publishers getting together to dictate it to us.
So there's finally a difference between the book industry and the recording industry, which I come from, because that's always been a front for the mob and money laundering.
The thing is, there's not enough money in book publishing to really attract mafia types. So they go for, bigger grossing enterprises like records and movies and, and hotels.
Yeah. So you, in your information, you kind of single out the year 2000 as a year of change. What is it about that year and what has changed since then?
Until 2000, the major technology of printing was high-speed industrial presses, which were used throughout the entire 20th century. And during the 20th century, those high-speed presses got even faster. But basically, all 20th century publishing used high-speed printing presses to publish tons and tons of books. But in 2000, that was the sort of time that digital publishing really began to take over. And with digital publishing, books are no longer physical objects. They are digital files that can be printed whenever you want them. And with print on demand, which is a digital form of printing, you have economical, cost-effective printing of short runs, which was impossible in industrial printing. Up until 2000, with industrial printing, it really did not make economic sense to print fewer than about 1,000 copies. But with digital publishing, you can print cost-effectively pretty much any number of copies, 100, 200, 500. After 2000 was when digital readers, e-readers, e-books got developed and became a big deal. And e-readers like the Kindle took off, and they became a big deal too. And so after 2000, even though most books are still read in print, they get printed differently, often with digital printing, and some of them don't get printed at all. Some of them are read as e-books. And so 2000 really marks the beginning of what I call the third book business. The first book business was Gutenberg until the late 19th century, which used a small cottage industry type printing presses for many hundreds of years. And then in the 20th century, we had high-speed industrial printing. And today we have digital printing and publishing. And so there have been really three different phases of the book business. And each of those phases has presented opportunities and perils that authors and publishers have had to contend with.
Well, given you obviously understand a lot about the history here, the thing that I always come to blows with is that, like, spending 15 bucks on a physical product, I will never have a problem. I still buy CDs because I like physical product. But when they want to charge me like the same $15 for something that I don't have a physical copy of, it doesn't make economic sense to me to purchase that. Is there a reason why they still think that we should be charged the same amount for their non-product that they're putting out?
Well,
And I know that most of the prices as we buy things online are defined by the companies. They have nothing to do with the authors in a lot of cases. Amazon sells your book for what they want to sell your book for.
That is true. The cost to produce an item doesn't necessarily reflect the cost that is charged. There's been a whole lot of contention about what ebooks should cost. When they were originally introduced, publishers wanted to charge $12.95 for ebooks, which was cheaper than the $19.95 for trade paperbacks. And publishers felt good about that. But Amazon came along and said, no, we're going to sell them for $9.95. And publishers flipped out and thought, you know, we're going to not make a whole lot of money. Well, actually, now you can buy ebooks on Amazon for less than a dollar. I mean, a lot of people, you can get ebooks, they're giving them away. There are so many now. Digital publishing has increased the number of books available by huge orders of magnitude. In 1980, American publishers released 45,000 different titles. 45,000. In 2010, since 2005 or so, publishers and self-publishers and indie presses and all the new players in publishing have released more than 2 million books a year. That's 44 times as many. Now, from 1980 to today, the population of the United States has increased about 20-25%. But the number of books being released has increased 4,400%. And so we have today a book glut like no one ever imagined. And when there's a glut, prices fall. And that's what's happened to books. So yes, your trade paperback still costs, you know, $17, $18, $19. And if you buy books for Kindle, you're going to pay $5, $6, $7. But If you look for them, you can get books a lot cheaper than that.
Okay. I wish I liked reading books on like a digital format personally, because that's good to hear. I'm still thinking, apparently looking at things from a couple years ago where I was, man, they were charging me way too much for something that's just, you know, a couple pieces of code.
Right. Well, there's plenty of software that brings a high price, and it's just a whole bunch of code.
So what does this all, I guess, mean for authors? Obviously, there's a lot more people going for a shrinking chunk of the pie. But
yes,
does that mean give up, or does that mean react to the game differently? Maybe change what the book means in the system?
Well, I exhort authors to change their expectations. In the 20th century, most books that got published sold at least 1,000 copies. Today, 80% of books sell fewer than 100 copies, and only 6% of books sell 1,000. And, you know, the problem in the 20th century was that a lot of authors were frustrated. Publishers kept saying, no, 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 you can't, I'm not going to publish your book. And so there were a lot of frustrated authors with manuscripts sitting in file drawers who couldn't get their books published. Nowadays, anybody can publish anything. And you may not get a fat contract with Simon & Schuster, but if you want to publish a book, you can. You can self-publish. You can hire a hybrid publishing company. There are all kinds of different ways to publish. And so we have this huge glut. The result of that is plummeting sales per title. And so authors who release books and think they're going to sell thousands of copies, chances are they're not. I mean, your first goal as an author should be to sell 100 copies. If you can sell 100 copies, you're in the top 20% of new release sales. And then beyond that, good luck selling more. I hope you sell as many as you can and hope you sell thousands. But like I said, only 6% of books today, only 6% of books released in 2024 will sell 1,000 copies. And that's very disappointing to a whole lot of authors, but I'm sorry, that's reality. And if you don't understand that, then all you can do is be bitter and depressed. If you do understand it, then you know your job is first to sell 100 copies. That puts you in the top 20%, and then try and keep selling, and maybe you'll sell some more.
So one of the things you mentioned in like our pre-roll questions is the idea of book scammers. And I'm wondering if when you say book scammers, this also leads into like the people that'll help you publish your book, which so many of them focus on helping, we'll say, people in an industry, a quote unquote, establish authority. And I'm also maybe curious what the percentage of the books that we put, yeah, there's millions of books put out there. How many of them are put out by people that really don't expect to sell the book? It's just there to kind of cement them in the SEO of the internet as an expert on a particular topic. They don't care if the book ever sells. It's just so that when someone looks up a topic, their name and the book come up and they, okay, so-and-so knows something about this. Is that an appreciable part of the mix to make a difference, or not really?
Oh, it is. I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, there are plenty of people who publish books, both fiction and nonfiction, hoping for a mass audience. Very few of them get a mass audience, but people publish hoping for that. Then there are a whole lot of people in the 21st century who publish small batches of books that are things like family histories, company histories, histories of schools, personal memoirs, that they're not really even interested in selling in bookstores or on the market. They want an item. They want a legacy. They want their relatives to know what their lives were like. They want their descendants to understand who they were. And so plenty of people publish books without really having ambitions to sell a whole lot of them. But most of the time, most authors are yearning for the mass audience, and the mass audience is extremely elusive. It's very hard to get traction and sell books. I mean, bestsellers do,
bestsellers now typically sell about 1 million copies. There was a bestseller last year called The Heaven and Earth Grocery Store by James McBride, which is a wonderful book, and it has sold 1 million copies. Now, I'm glad for Mr. McBride that his book is so successful. I think it's great. But that's really very few books get up there. I mean, the New York Times bestseller list contains about 200 books a year. That's out of 2 million. So the chance of being a bestseller is around 1 in 10,000 titles. And a lot of authors just don't appreciate that. And it's something that they need to, or else all they can be is angry and bitter and frustrated.
I'm curious if you can break it down a little bit for the particular audience I'm usually going for, people that would call like genre fiction. And what does it look like for them? Because genre fiction, honestly, has never been the bestseller type of fiction, with the exception of like severe outliers, like say a Stephen King. Like, it's always been a lot of people selling smaller amounts of books. Is the outlook the same for them? Is it different? I almost feel like it's like a worse situation, because most of the people that even give a shit about books anymore tend to fall into that kind of space. And like, you know, as bad as it is for like mainstream publishing, it's almost worse for them, because everybody wants to publish the next Game of Thrones or the next, you know, whatever it's going to be.
Well, it's a two-edged sword. Genre fiction sells huge numbers of books. I mean, romance fiction is the perennial top category of fiction. Mystery and thrillers are not far behind. Westerns, action adventure, erotica, they all sell an enormous number of books, in the hundreds of millions per year. But because they sell so many, a lot of people think, well, I'll write one and I'll sell a whole lot. And so those genre fields are incredibly crowded. And there's a whole lot more romance fiction being published every year than, for example, history or books about science. The genre categories are immensely, and they sell like blue blazes. But again, there's bestsellers and there's not. I mean, in the romance area, Colleen Hoover last year had 3 books simultaneously on the New York Times bestseller list, which almost never happens. But she's wildly popular. But what that means is that a whole lot of romance fiction writers don't sell very much at all. And why is that? Who knows? I mean, there's a certain magic in the luck.
I was going to ask why I've never heard of this person. And you went romance fiction, like, that's why I've never heard of her.
Right. You don't look at, you don't focus.
Skip right over it. Just go right past that section. Leave that to the wife. She can have it.
Right. Well, that's the way a lot of men feel. Very few men read romance fiction, but women eat it up. Which raises the point that most books are bought and read by women. Women read about 3/4 of all books and buy about 2/3 of all books. So if you're in the book business, your major customers are women.
So I actually do have a question about that, because I have a lot of men out there that would actually argue that they feel like they were pushed out of, like, they don't buy books anymore because the industry no longer caters books for men. It's pushed so hard into writing for women that they don't feel like they can get anything they want out of certainly mainstream publishing. And so, you know, there's a rise of, like, what do you call it? Pulp Rev, the Pulp Rev stuff that's coming out, where like they're going back all the way to like 50s and 60s fiction to try and find stuff that feels like it appeals to them, where the action adventure story was, you know, premier. Now, that could just be wishful thinking on their part, but I know that a lot of the stuff I read, certainly in the horror genre today, doesn't feel like the stuff that was coming out in, say, the 80s or 90s. Like, I'm going to be honest, a lot of it feels like it was written by cat ladies for cat ladies and not for me.
I'm not going to argue with you. There's plenty of trash written. But I will say this, that with 2 million books a year, if you look carefully, you can almost always find something that you're going to enjoy.
Oh, no, absolutely. That's why I do this, because like, I want people to make more of the stuff I like. It's completely self-centered. I want to convince people to make science fiction novels and horror novels that are directed directly at me.
And, you know, science fiction, horror, action adventure, a lot of those books that were published in the 20th century can come back into print digitally in the 21st. And so they haven't gone away. One of the great strengths of digital publishing is that books no longer go out of print. I mean, if you're interested in a horror novel that was published in 1956, it probably went out of print by 1960, and you just couldn't get it until many of those have come back into print, because books are now digital files. And when anybody wants one, it can be printed one at a time.
And so this is making it even worse for authors, because it's not like they're even competing against their contemporaries. They're competing against, like, in a way they never could have, the previous, you know, forebears in their industries, because, you know, like you said, nothing ever goes out of print.
Yeah. If you think that 2 million books a year is distressing, consider this. Amazon offers 17 million trade titles in English, 17 million books of the kind that would be sold in bookstores. I'm not talking about textbooks or religious texts or, you know, business titles. I'm talking about books you would find in bookstores. Amazon lists 17 million of them, plus 2 million more every year as the new ones come out. So on the one hand, that's awful for authors. I mean, it reduces every book to a snowflake in Antarctica, a blade of grass on a golf course that'll never get noticed. On the other hand, if you look carefully and you do notice, you can find books that you wouldn't have been able to find when books used to go out of print. So it's you know, it depends on your point of view. And
it's a buyer's market's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, the key thing is that authors and aspiring authors need to understand that the competitive universe in which they operate is so much more competitive than it's ever been. And you have to swallow hard and deal with that.
What can authors do as far as, like, when it comes to getting themselves out there, expectations, you know, there's plenty of people that'll offer marketing. Honestly, I don't even bother marketing with the people that, like, this show is dedicated to, because most of them can't afford my services. Like, it would be literally ripping them off, because I know, like you said, how many books they're actually going to sell and what it's going to cost for me to even collect the data to try and sell more books than that. It's just non-economical. But for a small publisher or a self-publishing entity, there are ways that they can help get their books out there that can make meaningful change. You know, I always just tell people, marketing is relationship building at scale. You, I think, take it a little bit more to, like, it's just relationship building, direct relationship building, and be happy with that. But elaborate a little bit more on it.
Well, the first thing I tell everybody who wants to write a book is get your book manuscript edited, because it has to read well for anybody to be interested in it. There's so many books to choose from that if the first page, the first chapter, the first sentence don't grab people, they're just going to put it down. So if you want to put the work into writing a book, I urge everyone to have it edited professionally by two or three developmental editors so that it really sings and shines, and so that you can be proud of it and proud of what you're selling. Beyond that, you know, then authors have to decide how they want to publish. And the traditional route is to get an agent who pitches to publishers and you get an advance and the book comes out. And that still happens. That still happens for a couple hundred thousand people a year, which is maybe 10% of books are published on the 20th century model still. And if you want to go that route, feel free. But it could take you a year or longer to find an agent who would represent you. It could take that agent a year or longer to find a publisher to publish it, if they find one at all. Time is money. If you want to go that route, you're going to be spending a whole lot of time. The other route is to do some form of self-publishing. And self-publishing doesn't mean that the author arranges everything. In fact, most self-publishers hire companies that print books, publish books. These are called hybrid publishers, or pay to play, pay to print. And you pay them, and they know all about book formatting. Some of them even edit. They can get you an ISBN. They can do all of the technical stuff that would require a significant learning curve for someone just jumping in and wanting to do it. And so those companies charge anywhere from about $5,000 to $20,000 to release a book. And you can decide to pay that or not. If you want to do everything yourself, you can, and it'll still cost you several thousand dollars to bring a book out, especially if you're paying editors to read it. But there's all kinds of choices that authors can make depending on their own financial circumstances and their artistic vision and how they want to proceed with their work. So there's no longer any right way to publish. There's just the way that works for who's ever doing it and whoever that author is. And so I encourage authors to get a broad overview of what's available and possible, and then make their best decision based on their own circumstances.
For me, the death knell in trad pub was, I had a previous guest on the show. She was a young Black woman, and her feedback from the when she was out getting published, and I was floored at this, was that when her fantasy, young adult fantasy novel, they didn't feel enough of her Black experience was in the book to bother with it. Well, and that's, I'm like,
the
whole,
yeah.
Okay, I don't know. I've lost the plot on all this. Like, yes, clearly they're doing something I'm not aware of.
A lot of Black writers have had that experience of publishers saying this book isn't Black enough. And in fact, there's a wonderful novel called American Fiction that was a movie last year about this very phenomenon of Black writers feeling that they can't win for losing. If you write something that's too Black, publishers reject it because white people buy it. And if you write something that's not Black enough, publishers reject it because they say you're not Black enough. So it all comes down to the author and the art. If you're an author and you have something to say, you just want to write something, you want to tell a story, I say, tell it. Tell your story. And make sure you tell it the best way you can, get it edited so it shines, and then make decisions about how you're going to publish it.
Mm-hmm. It was one of those decisions, start an email list early and focus on that being a major vector of your success.
Absolutely. There's a tremendous emphasis these days on having a quote-unquote robust social media presence, as if posting on Instagram and Facebook is going to sell your book. It doesn't. The research is very clear that the main thing, the main reason that people buy books is that someone they know recommended it to them. I mean, I'm a voracious reader. I almost never buy books based on some, you know, random post on Instagram. When I buy books, it's because a friend of mine said, Mike, I just read this book and I think you would really love this book. Authors to crawl out of their holes. You know, being an author is kind of a solitary enterprise, and so it often attracts loners who like solitude. And I like solitude, and I love to write by myself in a little room. But if you want to sell your work and you want to get to a market, you have to be friends with a lot of people and have a big circle of acquaintance and a big email list, and then appeal to them directly to buy your book. You know, who's going to care about your book when there's 2 million books out there? Well, chances are it's going to be the people who know you over random souls on social media. So I encourage people to develop broad circles of acquaintanceship, big email lists, and then email your list and do it several times.
Well, one of the things I always point out with authors, it's because it gets overlooked so much, and I know it's why there is so much drek out there. Authors like to focus on story. But the bottom line is, it's like there's only so many stories to tell. It's the age-old adage, like there's only so many stories to tell, and you really get it down to there's really only one story to tell. And you can dress it up however you like. I feel it's like super important to focus on the things that separate you. Number one, your author's story, whether or not you want to be a celebrity of any kind. The bottom line is that can be something that separates you immediately with the reader from the other types of, I don't know, the other books about trolls and dwarves and whatever they're reading. Like, it's very difficult to do that. The other thing is focusing, like, any type of you're doing marketing, like focusing on the protagonist and how the reader can see themselves in the protagonist. I feel like it gets glossed over so much who's actually in this story in an effort to gloat about this wonderful world building that you did. And this, look, Tolkien already did that. It was amazing. We love it. And it's, like you said, never going away. It's always going to be in the stores if people want glorious world building. But if there's a way to directly interface in a way that's unique to me, I like the idea of focusing on niches when it comes to this stuff. Like, find ways. I tell people, I don't care what, if you're in an industry of like auto mechanics, go out and start talking to other auto mechanics, because there's probably other things that you like together in common. Just a good place to start, as opposed to just throwing a wide net and hoping God you catch everybody.
I totally agree with you. I agree. The only thing that I would quibble with is that not every story has been told. Everyone has their own. I mean, you know, so if you talk about the American experience is the story of immigrants. Everyone's an immigrant. And every immigration story is sort of the same. But every immigration story is unique to the people who experienced it and the group they're in and the times that they immigrated to this country. And, you know,
I was going to say, there's only one Scarface.
Yeah, my grandparents immigrated to this country in the early 20th century, and they had lots of stories to tell. Well, immigrants who are coming into this country today have much different stories to tell. And I think everyone has stories that they can tell. And if you're going to write memoir, do it. If you're going to write fantasy fiction, fine. If you're going to write, like I did, I wrote Untold Story of Books as a history. Whatever floats your boat. If you're a writer, you have the freedom to write about anything you want. It doesn't mean you're going to get rich and famous, but it does mean that you can write whatever you want to write. And I say more power to you.
Now, I'm just ask this question. You can gloss over it if you want. How do your actual, you know, books outside of this sell? Or is this like something where people attack you and saying, this is just sour grapes because your books don't sell and nobody likes you or anything like that? I don't get the impression that that's the case. I feel like it's more of like you're hearing complaints of the people around you and trying to explain it for them.
My goal in publishing The Untold Story of Books was to tell authors and aspiring authors and people who love books what's really happening in the book business today. And, you know, I don't judge it. I mean, there's 2 million books published this year. How do I feel about that? Well, I have mixed feelings. On the one hand, lots of people get published. On the other hand, there's so many people are reading all those books that they're not going to read mine.
You have said you have 18 books that you've published outside of this one. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is my 19th book, right?
What do you normally publish in, out of curiosity?
Well, I made my career writing about health and sexuality. And so consumer health books is what I generally wrote. And I had a specialty in alternative medicine. And I had a big hit with a book about herbal medicine, a folklore meets science guide to medicinal herbs that talked about the traditional uses of 135 medicinal herbs and then looked at the research as to what they actually do.
I have a feeling many of my readers will be interested in that one, just to be clear.
Yeah, that book is called The Healing Herbs, and it took off like a rocket. I mean, that book sold 1 million copies, and it came out in 1981, so it's been in 4 editions. You know, this book has been a huge success.
So the moral is no sour grapes here.
No, I have no sour grapes. That book put my kids through college. I also wrote a mystery series for a while. 4 books in a mystery series, and those books hardly sold at all. The worst selling book of my mystery series sold 300 copies, and my best selling book in the mystery series sold about 2,500. So, you know, it's perfectly possible.
for an author to have one book that sells 300 copies and another book that sells a million copies. There's just no knowing what's going to strike a chord with the public. And all that you can do is practice your craft, practice your art, hope for the best, and try and market and promote and do the best you can.
Michael, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. This has been, I don't think it's been necessarily anything a lot of people didn't know, or like definitely at least feel in their heart of hearts, but the way you put it together and talk about it, I feel is important for people to like take it on the chin and like grapple with the reality of how this is.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Nick.
Where can we send people to pick up a copy?
Amazon and bookshop.org have The Untold Story of Books, and it can be ordered through any bookseller in the United States. So check it out and look at the Amazon page. Lots of people really like this book, and I'm really glad they do.
Well, thank you once again.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.